Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Tet Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing the Mishnah that we just saw. The Mishnah had a machloki between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera as to what the status of Stam Charamim are. If you do not specify what the Charam is for, do we assume that the Charamim are to the Kohanim? Or do we assume that Stam Charamim lebedek abayit? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera's position is that Stam Charamim lebedek abayit. And he quotes as his source text, Kol Charam Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaShem. Whereas the Chachamim say that Stam Charamim la Kohanim, because they quote the proof text from that which we've been speaking about until now, but it's the Achuzah, by Yasadeb, it's a Tobi Ovel Kodesh LaShem, because they are Charam la Kohen Te Achuzato. Those are the psukim that they brought. And now the Gemara is discussing the character of these different types of Charamim. Tarabanan, Charamei Kohanim, Charam that's going to the Kohanim. Whether that means that he said Cherem LeKohen, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera, according to the Chachamim, he said Stam Cherem, Ein Lahem Pidyon. There's no way to redeem them, Venotanim LeKohen. And they have to be given to the Kohen. Charamim, Kozman Shehen Bebeit Ba'alim, as long as the Charamim remain in the house of the owners and have yet to be given to the Kohen, Harien Kehekdesh L'chol Divrehem. They have the status of Hekdesh, like any other aspect of Hekdesh, which includes, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, Asurim Bahana'a, and Mi'ilah, Mo'alin Bahen, that both of those aspects of Hekdesh apply to this Cherem that's sitting in the house of the Beit Balim, even though in the end they're going to the Kohen, which would also imply, if you look at Tosafot back on Kaf Chet Amud Aleph, he thinks that there's even a Kedushat Aguf associated with these Charamim, so they have significant Kedusha associated with them, even though all of that will dissipate as soon as you give it to the Kohen and it'll become Chulin, as we're going to see in a second. Nevertheless, while they remain in your possession, Cherem carries a huge weight with it, as we discussed yesterday, that a Cherem is a powerful form of Hekdesh, Neder, Nidui. Anytime it's used in those contexts, it's a very powerful type of execution of that. And similar here with Hekdesh, it's a very powerful form of Hekdesh. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Kol Cherem Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaShem. The Cherem is Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaShem. It's classified or similar to Kodesh Kodeshim and dedicated to Hashem, and that's what it means. It's like Hekdesh. Natanan the Kohen, once you've distributed it to the Kohen like you're supposed to, Harei Hein Nechol Divrayim Kechulin. Then they become absolutely Chulin, and the Kohen can use them as he pleases. Shenemar, the pasuk that we spoke about yesterday is Daf Kol Cherem B'Yisrael Lechayyeh. Pasuk from Parshat Korach. It says all the Charamim go to you. To you means a reference to Aharon, to the Kohanim. And those are Chilek mi Matnota Kuhuna. And the Matnota Kuhuna, the Kohanim can do as he pleases with it. There's no residual Kedusha on the Charamim once they are given to the Kohanim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera Omer, Stam Charamim Nebedek Abayit. Now, Bishla Rabbanon, in the Mishnah, and we noted this yesterday, the Rabbanon explicate on their position. First of all, by explaining what their source text is, which we just read before, as well as what they do with the text that Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera brings as his source text. And that's what it says here. Bishlam Rabbanu Kedemafarshi Tamayu Betaimad Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera. They explain their pasuk, which is their proof text, the pasuk, Per Chav Zayin Pasuk Chav Aleph in Vayikra, Peasadeb Etzei Tobi Yovel Kodesh Lashem Kisteachem Lakoin Teachuzato. They deal with that pasuk. They also deal with the pasuk that's by Charamim in pasuk Kavchet, which is Kol Cherem Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaShem, which is the source text for Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera. And they explained that that was Hekdesh Iloi, the ability to give even on something that's already Kodesh, Kodesh Kodeshim, Kodeshim Kalim, and you could be Makdish, an additional value above that, which was the Tovat Hana'ah, which we spoke about in the Mishnah, how to calculate that. That value, you can be makdish, you can add on top. And that's how they use the posuk of Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera. Ayala Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera, hai kisteh acherim mayavidle. So now, we understand the source of Rabbi Yehuda ben Metera's position, which is kol cherim kodesh kodeshim hu LaHashem. But then the Gemara wants to know, what does he do with the posuk of the chachamim? Sounds like it goes to the Kohen. Sounds like the Chachamim are right. What is he going to do with that Pasuk? Yesterday we discussed maybe why we don't have to deal with the fact that there's a Pasuk in Korach also that says that Stam Charamim go to the Kohanim, and that's even a better proof text for the position of the Chachamim. And we discussed in the Shita Mikubetz why the Chachamim didn't bring that, as well as why Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera doesn't feel that that's a normative pasuk, because he believes, as the Shita Mikubetzit said, that people's mindset when they makdish something is that it goes to Shem Shamayim, that it goes to Hashem and not to the Kohanim. So now, mi ba'ilei l'kedetanyo. He needs that pasuk for the following braita. Kistei acherem l'koin tei achuzato. Ma talmud lomar. What is going on here in this connection between the stei acherem to the stei achuza? Minayin l'koin shigdis stei chermo. How do I know that a Kohen who's makdish, the sadeh that he got through cherem, shalo yomar, so you shouldn't say, ho, v'yotza the Kohanim, since it's going to be distributed to the Kohanim, hari tachet yadi tei shalit. So now it's already under my possession or in my control, then it should remain mine. So now just the background of the case is a situation in which somebody gave cherem lekohanim. So according to Rebbe Ben Terah, it means that they declared it cherem lekohanim, or the chachamim with stam charamim, and it went to the Kohen. So it was distributed to this Kohen as part of a cherem that was placed upon it by the owner of the field. And now this Kohen becomes the new owner of the field because it's distributed to the Kohanim of that Mishmar that are serving when this happens. He got a piece of that Stei Achuza. That new field now becomes his Stei Achuza and the Kohen's field. But then that Kohen was Makdish, this Stei Achuza. Now, as we noted already before, there's a difference between a Kohen being Makdish, his own Stei Achuza, which is something that he inherited from his parents, the Kohanim, part of the Arei Kohanim, part of the Arei Levim. Those are not subject to the Yovel. Those aren't subject to the rules of Stei Achuza of Hekdesh, that they are given to the Kohanim once the Yovel comes. But when the Kohen acquires property in a manner by which he's gifted it as one of the Matnot Kuna, whether that's through Cherem, or whether some other party was Makdish their Sadeh, and then it's distributed to the Kohanim and the Yovel, both of those situations where the Kohen takes possession of it, yes, it becomes his Achuza, but it becomes his Achuza like a regular Yisrael. That means that it's subject to all the rules that Yisrael would have with regards to their Stei Achuza. That's similar to the case over here. The Kohen here now is an Achuza, and he's Makdish the Sadeh. Had it been its own Achuza, we already learned in the Gemara before, that's what the word Achuzato teaches you, that's got to be Achuza Shelo. If it's his Achuza, then it remains with him and he's protected. If it's not his Achuza, then it's distributed to the Kohanim on the Yovel. So now, that's what happened here. This Kohen who received this piece or parcel of land through a Cherem of Yisrael, and now he's Makdish the Sadeh. So now he wants to say that since the property is mine anyway, why should we distribute it to the other Kohanim? I may as well keep it for myself. And Rashi says, because Shani Muchzakba, I'm still in control of it or in possession of it, so therefore Teisheli should be mine. The only problem with that, and that is pointed out by the Shita Mikubetzit over here, how is it in his possession? Shita Mikubetzit in Otet Vav writes, Sheli, that it's mine, Gilyon Lav Davko. That's not, in reality, it's his. Nakat Sharei Higdisha. If he's Makdisha, it's not his. Elohachi Perusho. This is the way you have to understand it. Harei Tachat Yadi. It's still under my control. The Shayech Ani Ba Tvei Mikol Inche. I have a stronger relationship with it, or a closer relationship with it than anyone else. Ve'yeshna Tachat Yadi. And it's still in my possession right now. Sharelo Yechzik Ba Gizbar. The treasurer of Hekdesh hasn't come around to take possession of it yet. He hasn't really accessed it or taken possession of it. So, for these two reasons. Number one is, my relationship with the land is more powerful than anybody else's relationship with the land. And number two, because I currently have access to the land and I am controlling the land because the Gizbar has yet to come and take it away or sell it off. So for that reason, I have a certain relationship and closeness and possession of the land. And so maybe it should be distributed to me because I'm a Kohen and it's going out to Kohanim as well. Vidinu. And it would make sense as a Kavachomer, B'shel Acharim Ani Zocheh, if other people did this, it would come to me. B'shel Atzmei Lo Koshekein. If it was my own, then certainly I should get it when it comes around to the Yovel. Tamal Omar, Kistei Acharim Lakoyin Ti Achuzato. V'chi Mayan Lamadnu Mistei Acharim. What are we learning out from Stei Acharim? So, it's saying over here that the din of a Stei Achuza is similar to that of a Stei Acharim. And now it says, Me'ata, Harizeh Bablo Lameid, this Stei Acherim came to teach us something about Stei Achuza, Benimsa Lameid. In the end, it learns something from Stei Achuza. Mekish Stei Chermo, the Stei Achuza, Shel Yisrael. it now compares the stei chermo of the Kohen to a stei achuza of Yisrael. Ma stei achuza shel Yisrael yotza mitachet yado umitkalechet the Kohenim. Just like the stei achuza of Yisrael goes out on the Yovel and is distributed to the Kohenim, av stei chermo, so too the stei cherim of a Kohen, which is his achuza, but it's his achuza like a stei achuza of Yisrael, yotza mitachet yado umitkalechet the achav Kohenim. We'll have to go in the Ovel and be distributed to his brethren, the Kohanim. And maybe we would assume that he was part of that Nishmar. And so he would have gotten a piece of it. And now he wants to keep all of it. Despite all of that, we say that he's got to go in to the lot and get a piece of it like all the other Kohanim. He doesn't have any preemptive rights to take this piece of property. It's not his. And therefore, just like a Stei Achuza of Yisrael gets distributed to the Kohanim, on the Yovel, if it was redeemed by another party, or it wasn't redeemed at all, according to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, so to a stei cherem that was given to the Kohen, he has the same rules, and he has the same relationship with his land as the Yisrael has with his stei achuza, because this is not the property of the Kohenim. It was property given to the Kohen as a matnat kuna. Ve'idach, what about the Chachamim? Where did they learn this din out from? They learned it out from mecherem ha-cherem. They learn out from the fact that there's an extra hey on here, which is kastei ha-cherem. So that extra hey teaches you this din, that the stei ha-cherem has the same din as the stei achuza, and the Kohen does not get to keep it, and it has to be distributed to the Kohenim when the Yovel comes around, if he was makdishit. V'idach and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, cherem ha-cherem lo mashmalek. He doesn't think that that's a real limud, and so therefore he needs a more full, robust limud. And that's what he does with this pasuk over here. That's what he uses it for, not to teach you that stam charamim are the kohenim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, what about the fact that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira also needs to get the lima that the chachamim had in our Mishnah? They use his pasuk that says kol cherem kodesh kodeshim hu l'Hashem, where he says that's the proof that stam charamim l'Hashem. They chachamim use that pasuk to teach you about hekdesh iloi. The ability to have Hekdesh sit on top of Kodshim Kaleim and Kodshay Kodoshim. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, where does he know that din from? The Chala Kodshay Kodoshim and Kodshim Kaleim and Nale. How does he know that? Sabalaki Rabbi Yishmael. He holds like Rabbi Yishmael, who's going to be found in the upcoming Mishnah that we're going to do at the end of the parak here. Amar Rav, Halacha to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. The Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which is an unusual position to take over here, because the Rav Shavik Rabbanan, Rabbi Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, why would Rav opt out of paskin like the Rov, like the Rabbonon, and paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira? Where it says, Breita ipcho tanyo. Breita had their positions reversed. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira and the Chachamim's positions were reversed, and therefore the Chachamim say, Stam Charamim lebedek abayit in the Breita. Where it says, I still don't understand it. Shabak matnitin vavid ke Breita. Why would he give up a Mishnah and follow a Breita? A Mishnah carries more weight in terms of the integrity of the Mishnah. A Breita is much more suspect in terms of both its integrity as well as its sourcing. And so if you have a choice between a Mishnah and a Breita, a Mishnah is definitely going to trump. Where it says, Rav matnitan nami ipcho tani. Rav had our Mishnah also reversed. Not only did he have the Breita reversed, he also had the Mishnah reversed. Where it says, my chazi ta'apchot matnitan mikami Breita. Rav found the Breita had the positions reversed. And the Gemara assumes now that then he reversed the Mishnah's positions as well. So why would you use the version of the Breita and assume that's correct, and then amend the Mishnah to match that of the Breita? Napich Breita mikami matnitin. Say the Mishnah's right, and say the Breita's wrong, and now let's take whatever we have in the Mishnah and reverse the Breita to match the Mishnah. So Rav Gamre Gomir, Rav had a Misora from his Rebbe, that was the way it should be, that the Mishnah's positions that we have are reversed, and therefore you should change them over. And the Chachamim are the ones who say, Stam Charamim the Perek Abayit. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, Stam Charamim the Kohanim. Iyachi. If that's the case, then Rav should have said, to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, Kerabonim mi Baile. Why does he say the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira? He really believes the Halacha is like the Chachamim. But his Chachamim say something else. But he still thinks the Halacha is like the Rabbonon. So why didn't he say that? Achi Kamar. Lamai Dabchitu Vitanitu. The way that you have your Mishnah, where you flip it over, and now Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira has the position that I think is the position of the Chachamim, Halacha ka Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. According to your Mishnah, your version of the Mishnah, then the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which is, in my view, the position of the Chachamim in the Mishnah, which is that Stam Charamim, Lebedek Habayit. Au Gavra, Da'achraminu, Lenichse, Bepumpudita. this individual was machrim his possessions in Pupadita. It's obvious that when we're speaking here, it's going to say, Atta lekameh de Rabbi Yehuda, he came to ask the shayla of Rabbi Yehuda, that we're talking about post the Qurban, we're talking about when there's no bayit, there's no Beit HaMikdash, and the Yovel is not Noheg anymore. So Amar Lehi, so Rabbi Yehuda said to him, Shkol arba zuze ve'achil alayu. Take four zuz. You should transfer the kedusha onto that money. V'shadinto v'naharo. And then throw it into the river. V'shtarulach. And then it'll all be mutar for you. Alma kasavar. It must be that Rabbi Yehuda holds stam charamim the bedek abayit. And stam charamim go to bedek abayit because otherwise you could not redeem them. We just said at the top of the amud here that when it comes to stam charamim of the kohanim, ein lehem pidyon, there's no way to redeem them. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda is allowing him to redeem it shows you that it is stam charamim lebedek habayit, similar to his Rebbe Rav. The Gemara says, well, the ability to redeem it for four zuz, kiman, who's that like? It's Kishmuel. That's like his other Rebbe, Shmuel, who says, damar, hektesh shaveh maneh, shechilelo al shaveh pruta. Person who has hektesh that's worth 100 zuz, he can transfer that kedusha off of it onto a single pruta. And if he does it, michulau, it works. The Gemara says, okay, that's interesting, but ima damar Shmuel, shechilelo. That's if it happened. If you did that, it works. Lechatchila mi'amar. Who says that he allows you to do this chatchila to go out of your way to redeem it at a much lower value? It says, Hanemile bizman beit hamikdash kayam. Shmuel's statement where it sounds like only bidiavad do we allow it, that's when the mikdash is still extant. Because there, ikab seda. Because there, if we allow you to do it, the chatchila, hektesh is going to lose out. Aval bizman hazeh, today, where the mikdash is no longer extant, afilu chatchila, we allow you to do this even the chatchila, because there's no loss to hektesh, because hektesh doesn't exist, it's not going to get it. And everything that you redeem onto this money is going to go to waste. And better to throw out less than more. So we're going to even allow you to do this, the chatchila, or in essence, our status today is a status of bidiavad. And therefore we're going to allow you to do it, even the chatchila. And again, we use this with regards to Maaser Sheni today as well, where we allow the redemption of much larger sums or values onto a pruta, because of this din of Shmuel, which is that none of this is going to get utilized. It's all going to be thrown out anyway. So we allow you to use this din of Shmuel, the chatchila, bizman hazeh, even though Shmuel's din is only a bidiavad din, but we view our position or our situation today as being bidiavad. If it's following Shmuel, his Rebbe's position, afilu prutanami. So then why did he use four zuz? Why did he just use a pruta and he would have been done? Pirsume milta. He wanted to make a big public demonstration about it. He wanted to get publicity surrounding this redemption. Now, why would he want the publicity, or what's the purpose of that publicity? So the Rabbeinu Gershom claims that it is because he wanted to show people, Mishum Pirsume Milta de Bar B'diahu. He wanted to show people that you can redeem these items. But that means that he's trying to show them that Stam Charamim are the Bedek Abayit, and they are subject to redemption. Or he was just showing that these items require the pidyon and have the possibility of pidyon, and that's what he was trying to demonstrate to everyone. On the other hand, the Shittim Mikubetzin in Odzayin brings from the Rosh that the purpose of Pirsumei Milta over here is to offset the other publicity surrounding it. And he shows that by the following. He says, Upidyon Kerem Revai. Kerem Revai, which is a kerem, or maybe even a field with the fruits that are now in their fourth year. After 3 years of Orla, the fourth year, you redeem them and they have the same din as like Maaser Sheni. So we're talking about Pidyon, Kerem Revai, or maybe even Pidyon, Maaser Sheni would have the same thing. Ein tzarich she'ar bazuze the presume milta. You don't need four zuz to make it into a public issue. The davka hektesh vecherem, davka with hektesh and charamim, dit le'kala, because those are issues that are already in the public venue. Because they're already in the public venue, you need to mitigate that by doing something public to offset that. So now you have to tzarich lefarsem gama pidyon. Then you have to make the redemption also something that is public. Sheidu she'ein nehenin min hekdesh. So people know that you're not allowed to get hana from hekdesh, and that this person is not getting hana from hekdesh, and therefore he does something publicly to offset what's already in the public realm. Whereas by Kerem Ravai, Maisu Sheni, where it's not in the public realm, then you don't need to do a big public event. You can do something smaller like a pruta. So the necessity of the publicity, according to this, is because there is already publicity surrounding being makdish the item, being machrim the item. So to offset that, we need a public redemption to show that there's no problem of hana now, and we took care of the problem of the Isra hana, or that there is an Isra hana. That's as opposed to Kerem Ravai, Maisu Sheni, which are not things that are of public nature. And therefore, you don't need a public way to redeem them in order to free them of their kedusha. So that's the view of the Shita Mekubetzet. Rabbeinu Gershom sees it as much more basic, that we want it to be public that you're allowed to redeem these items, or that you can redeem these items. Tosfos points out this ability to redeem the Hekdesh Chayrem seems to be in opposition or contradiction to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says that you have to let all the items rot and go bad. Tosfos answers that problem by creating a distinction between metaltalim, where you would do harkava, and metaltalim, which are items that you can let rot or destroy, and they will not cause a takala, versus property that's always going to be there and will be a problem forever. And therefore, the only solution by karka is to redeem it, and therefore, we must be speaking about karka in this situation. And the Gemara says, Amar Ula, Iyavai Hatam, Ula says, if I was there, Avayevna Kula the Kohanim, I would have given it all to the Kohanim. Alma kasavar. Ula, it's clear that Ula believes, stam charamim le kohanim, that the stam charamim would go to a kohen, and over here we said cheirem, we would have distributed it to the kohanim. Now, over here, the Shita Mekubetzet brings what is very difficult with Ula's position. Remember, we're in Pumpadita, and we're dealing with what seemingly is karka over here, and we said before that karka is distributed to the kohanim of that mishmar. And now, you're speaking about post-Korban HaBayit, when there are no Mishmarot, and you're speaking about giving it to whichever Kohen you choose that's local. So how does Ula say such a thing? Or what was Ula actually suggesting over here? The Gemara says, so the Shita Mekubetzet in Otchet says, Kasha, Heichi name the Kohanim, Alo Mikarka Havu, Veim the Kohanim, Shavuto Mishmar. They belong to Kohanim of Mishmar. He says, V'yishlamar Dehochi Ka'amar. This is what he really means, that the Havamina would be, the din should be that it's to the Kohanim, because Stam Charamim the Kohanim, Vein Lahem Pidyon. All he was saying is that it should have gone to the Kohanim, and it can't be redeemed, and he's just opposing that view of Rav Yehuda. Not that he really believed you would distribute it to the Kohanim, he just says that you wouldn't be able to redeem it, and you should have given it to the Kohanim, not that he really meant it, he should give it to the Kohanim. And then Shita Mekubetzet says, Inami, Kida Amrinan Bishmaitin, we're going to say later on in this, today's daf, that when it comes to karka of chutz la'aretz, karka of chutz la'aretz has the same din as metaltalin in Eretz Yisrael. And we saw earlier that metaltalin, with regards to charamim, they get given to whichever kohen you choose. And therefore you can distribute it to whomever you choose, and you don't have to give it to the kohen of that mishmar. And then, obviously, the problem will be solved by saying that what we're dealing with here are metaltalin, and even though we're dealing with karka, it's karka of chutz la'aretz, and karka of chutz la'aretz has the same din as metaltalin in Eretz Yisrael. And if that's the case, then you don't have to distribute to the mishmar. Now, even though you don't have to give it to the mishmar, you can give it to the particular kohen that is local to you. So now the Gemara says, Meitavei, we have a braita that seems to be problematic for both of their positions, which is, Ein Eved Ivri Noheg, Ela Bezman Sheyovel Noheg. The din of Eved Ivri is only applicable when the Yovel is in effect. Now, Yovel needs Kol Yoshveha Leha, needs the majority of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, and it seems to be that there might be a second qualification, which it means that you need a representative of each one of the Shvatim to be there, and you can't just have one or two Shvatim, you need a representative from all Shvatim to be there. So then, the Yovel would not be in effect in the time of Pumpadita, post-Korban HaBayit, when the Jews were already in Galut, there was no Rov Yoshveha Leha. And so there was no Yovel post the Korban. And if we now correlate between Eved Ivri and Yovel, that means if there's no Yovel, there's no Eved Ivri, Shinamar. Because it says about the Eved Ivri, Achnat Yovel Yavod Imach, that he works with you until the Yovel. So that means that an integral part of the din of an Eved Ivri is the possibility of working until the Yovel. So that's only true if there is no Yovel. If there's no Yovel, then there can't be an Eved Ivri because the halachot are not going to be applied properly. The way we have it here is a cherem. The Shita Mekubetzet changes the girsa to ein ste achuza noheget ela bezman sheyovel noheg. Similarly, ste achuza, the dinim of ste achuza are only relevant when the Yovel is in effect. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says about a stay achuzah, Beyatza beYovel, Beshav lachuzato, that when it comes to the Yovel, it'll be disgorged. It will be returned to the person who was the original owner of the stay achuzah. So that would only be true if there is a Yovel to return it to him. Otherwise, none of the dinim of stay achuzah apply. Now there are multiple dinim of stay achuzah, and Rashi says they're all negated when the Yovel is not in effect. Including, one is that he doesn't have a right to redeem it at the defeased or depreciated price. We know that the Torah prescribes that if someone who sells their field, it would only be sold until the Yovel. And then, if he wants to redeem it, he can redeem it by just simply taking the purchase price, the lease price that the person who purchased it paid, divided it amongst the years that remain from the time of that sale until the Yovel. And that's what the value of each year is. And this individual can come along and say, at any point, deduct whatever you have used so far, and I'll pay you the residual amount, then buy it back for you. So Rashi says that's batel. When there's no Yovel, then that doesn't happen, and he can sell it back at any price that he wants. There's no limit to the price. Now, part of that would be because there's no Yovel. There's no Yovel, there's going to be no disgorgement of the property. It's no longer a leasehold. When you sell the property, it's really a permanent sale of sorts. And for that reason, it makes sense that you could charge whatever it is, again, in the beginning, and whatever it is when he comes to redeem it, because the value is fluctuating with land prices, not with the possibility of how many years there are until the Yovel. That's number one. Number two is, you can't force the person to sell it back to you. Even though it's a stay achuzah for you, you can't force them. You come and want to redeem it, then we don't compel that person to allow you to redeem it. If he wants to, he can. As opposed to when the Yovel is around, then the stay achuzah, he has a right to do it, and you can't stop him. And also, with regards to be magdish a stay achuzah, by magdish stay achuzah, we saw that you pay a fixed amount, which is 50 shekel kesef, per aveid zera chomer se'orim, over the period of the Yovel, and then for each year, you take off a sela upundiyon. That whole system of redemption only applies when the Yovel is in effect, because then the stay achuzah has the status of a stay achuzah. Otherwise, it's treated like any other seder, seder mikna, and it's redeemed at its true value, rather than at that fixed rate of the Mikdash. So there are all of these halachot that apply to a stay achuzah. Rashi claims that they are all suspended when there is no Yovel. And so stay achuzah does not apply when there is no Yovel. Ain batei arei chuma nogim elzeban yovel noek. The din of batei arei chuma is only relevant when the Yovel is in effect. Shenemar lo yetzei ba Yovel. That if a person sells a house in a walled city, if he does not redeem it within the first year, then it stays permanently with the buyer, and it's not then disgorged when the Yovel comes about. It's not returned to its previous owner. So now, all of that doesn't apply, which is that you don't have a right to redeem it in the first year, because Yovel is not in effect. Therefore, Batei Rechoma is not in effect, which means that you don't have a right to come and redeem it in the first year. It has no obligation to sell it back to you. And so therefore, it will stay with him permanently from the moment that you sell it to the buyer. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai omer, ein stei charamin noagim ela bizman sheyovel noeg. The din of stei charamin, which is that if something you make into a cherem, whether you believe it's lebet gabayit or whether you believe it's kohanim, it's only relevant when the yovel is in effect. Shinemar, because of the pasuk again that we discussed so many times in Perachav Zayin pasuk Chav Aleph, vayasadeh b'tzeito b'yovel kodesh l'Hashem k'stei acherem l'kohen tiyeh achuzato. And so again there, it shows you that there's a correlation between the Yovel and the Stei Acherim. And so for that reason, Stei Acherim is correlated with Yovel. If there's no Yovel being practiced, then there's going to be no din of Stei Acherim. So now, that's the question on both of them. Because both according to Rabbi Yehuda and according to Ula, they're saying that Cherim has an impact. And this is clearly in a period of time when there's no Yovel in effect, and yet they're still dealing with a Cherim. Similarly, a ger tushav, the din of a ger tushav, is only relevant when there is a yovel, and that amara bivai maitaima. How does he know that? Acha tov tov, the gzeira shava that we learn. Ketiv alcha, it says devarim tetva pasuk tet zayin. It says vaya ki yomare lecha lo etzei miimach, and the Ebed Ivri says, I don't want to leave you. I'm happy. I want to stay with you. Ki ahevcha ve'et beitecha. He loves you and your family. Ki tov lo imach. because things are really good for him with you. So that's ki tov lo imach, that's an eved ivri. We already established that an eved ivri is correlated with the yovel. Uchtiv hotam, and it's written in Perchav Gimel in Devarim, Pasuk Yud Zayin. It's actually helpful to know the pasuk before, which is lo tazkir eved el adunav. You may not return a slave to his master. Asher yinatzel elecha mi'im adunav, who came to seek refuge with you from his master. And the Gemara, Chazal, tell us that that pasuk is speaking about a ger toshav. In the subsequent pasuk, it says, imcha yeshev bekir becha, the ger toshav can dwell amongst you, but makom yeshev char, bechad sharecha, wherever he chooses in one of your cities, bitov lo, wherever it's good for him, lo tonenu, you may not oppress him, you may not cheat him, you may not overcharge him. All the things that come with ona'ah, you may not do to him. So now we have tov, tov, exereshava. Just like the tov by Eved Ivri, and an Eved Ivri is only relevant during the Ovel, so to the tov that is spoken about here by the Ger Toshav is only applicable when the Ovel is in effect. Now, Ger Toshav, Rashi over here says, is an individual who's accepted upon himself not to worship Avodah Zarah, but he eats Nevelot. So Rashi takes the very narrow definition of what a Ger Toshav is, the Machloket in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and then Machloket persists into the Rishonim as to how many of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach the individual has to keep in order to be classified as a Ger Toshav. This is the more minimalistic view, which is it's only the fact that he has to deny Avodah Zarah. As long as he does that, then he's classified as a Ger Toshav. And that gives him a special status amongst the Israel, which is number one, he's protected in terms of lo tonenu. And number two is that you have an obligation, lechachayoto, to support him and to sustain him. There is a mitzvah of tzedakah for the Ger Toshav when he lives amongst you. So that would be suspended when there's no Yovel. So Rashi says over here, the suspension of him being a Ger Toshav means that you no longer have an obligation to support him. The Rabbeinu Gershom adds on, there's also no restriction of lo tonenu anymore, which is a much harder thing to say because maybe there shouldn't be any ona'ah irrespective of that. But maybe that's because of Chilul Hashem rather than the direct law of lo tonenu. But both of those dinim, which are particular to Ger Toshav, would be suspended now because there is no Yovel, and therefore there's no din of a Ger Toshav. What's interesting about this is that it leads to a machloket between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam in the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph, Amud Bet, whereby the Tosfot over there is discussing a hekesh that the Gemara has between Shemitat Safim and what seems to be the Yovel. And Rashi suggests over there that the Yovel was not in effect during the Bayit Sheni, and therefore there was no Shemitat Safim. That's the claim of Rashi, because the two are correlated. Ashmatat karka no naga bebayit sheni. There was no yovel to disgorge properties or force properties to return to the original owners in bayit sheni. And therefore, there was no din of hashmatat safim, which is correlated with the yovel. The Rashi makes an assumption that there was no yovel during bayit sheni. The Rabbeinu Tam disproves Rashi, not because he finds that they gave back karka during bayit sheni, but he finds evidence of cases where the Gemara speaks about, or the Tanaic works speak about Eved Ivri during Bayit Sheni, and speak about Batei Arei Choma during Bayit Sheni. The fact that all of those were in effect during Bayit Sheni shows you that Mayovel must have been in effect, because otherwise none of these dinim would apply, as we just indicated over here. And that's how the Rabbeinu Tam proves that he thinks that the Yovel was being counted and was in effect and practiced during Bayit Sheni. And then he says the Gemara that we're going to see later on in Arachin, Adach Lamed Bet, which is really going to take up this issue of how you count the Yovel, and when you count the Yovel, and has impact on when the Shemitah turns out. So the Gemara there says, Manu Yovlot Lekadesh Shemitim. And from there it sounds like, and the Gemara will see there, that there was no Yovel during Bayit Sheni. So the Rabbeinu Tam says that's only in the Havamina. Havamina is that in the time of the Shivat Zion, at Bayit Sheni, then only the Shtei Shvatim, only Binyamin and Yehuda were put into Galut by the Babylonians, because the Asarat Shvatim had already been taken into Galut by the Assyrians much earlier. So the only tribes that went into Galut were the Binyamin and Yehuda. They were taken to Babel, and therefore Shivat Zion in Bayit Sheni only comprised of Binyamin and Yehuda, two Shvatim. But the Gemara later on will say then that Yirmiyahu brought back the Aseret HaShvatim, and therefore there was a representative of all the Shvatim, and that's the Rabbeinu Tam's Shita. As long as you have a representative from each Shevet, you don't need all the Shvatim there in terms of their numbers in the population. You just need a representative from each Shevet, and then as long as you have the role of Klal Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael, you can have the Yovel Minoheg. And that's how he explains both our Gemara coming up on Daf Lamed Bet, as well as the perfectus of the Yovel during Bayit Sheni. One thing Tosafot challenges the Rabbeinu Tam about is that seems to be a little bit of a weak Hava Mina, because it says it's Zil Kari Bei Rav. It says just learn Tanakh. In Ezra, it tells you that there are representatives from all the Shvatim that are going back in Shivat Zion. He says, so he doesn't know why the Gemara even had a question about it. It seems pretty obvious. Right? That just was a little sidebar about these items that are practiced only when the Yovel is in effect. But our big issue is the fact that both Rabbi Yehuda and Ula are suggesting that this individual, who was Machrim and Sadeh, would have to deal with it, even though there was no Yovel taking place. Gemara says, Lo kasha, habme mekarke, habme taltale. Depends what you're speaking about. If you're speaking about fixed assets, real property, over there, yes. They don't have a din of cherim unless the yovel is in effect or being practiced. But b'metaltalim, then it's effective even when there's no yovel. Now, the Gemara says, okay, that's a nice answer, except, amased de pumpadita, b'gevei karkei dami havo. That incident in pumpadita also involved property. It was all of his possession and involved property as well. The Gemara says, mikarkei de chutz la'aretz kimetaltei de eretz yisrael dami. The land of chutz la'aretz has the same din as metaltalim in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it has the standing of metaltalim and is still subject to charamim, even post the Yovel. They were having this individual deal with it, either going to Rabbi Yehuda by doing a pidyon, or going to Ula, it should have been given to the Kohenim. But they both believe that cherim was impactful here because it was a cherim of metaltalim, and even though it was speaking about karka, karka of chutz la'aretz has a din like metaltalim in Eretz Yisrael, which is very interesting because how far do you take this? How literally do you take this? That karka and chutz la'aretz is metaltalin. Does that mean that it doesn't have a din of karka? We have many rules that deal with karka, including enishbaim ala karkaot, kefel, all sorts of dinim that don't apply to karkaot. Does that mean in chutz la'aretz they do apply because the karka is not considered to be karka? So there are those that wanted to extrapolate it in that way, although the Raivud comes out strongly against that, saying that this is a unique din over here, whereby the din of cherem is connected to the yovel. So when you connect it to the yovel, then we're speaking about something that has a din of kedushat haaretz, or is connected to the kedushat haaretz. And that's why the land of chutz la'aretz is considered like metaltalim in this context. But it doesn't mean generally that it has a din like metaltalim, and he really narrows this din to the issue of charamim and doesn't extrapolate it to any other din. Now, the Mishnah that was referenced to earlier on the daf, which is Rabbi Shmuel's view about how he gets Hekdesh Iloi. He says, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Ketuv Echad Omer, Takdish. One of the psukim tells us that you should be Makdish, the item. But Ketuv Echad Omer, Lo Yakdish. And the other pasuk says, you may not be Makdishit. So the one pasuk that they're referencing to here about Lo Yakdish is speaking about a Bechor that is found in Vayukah Chav Zayin, the psukim that we've been working with all along, with regards to a bechor, it tells you, ach bechor, asher yivukar la'ashem, ba'be'ema, lo yakdish ishoto, you may not be makdishit, im shorim se la'ashem hu, it belongs to Hashem. You may not be makdishit because it is already kadosh, it's kadosh mirechem, you don't need to be makdishit. The only problem is that in Perek Ted Vav, in Dvarim, Pasuk Yutet, it says, ko bechor, asher yivaleid bibchacha ubitzoncha hazachar, Takdish l'Hashem elokecha. You should be makdish to Hashem. Lo tavod b'bchor sherecha, lo tavod b'bchor tzonecha. So we have a stira here. We have a stira between Vayikra Chav Zayin, where it says that you cannot be makdish to b'chor, and that which it says in Devarim Tetva, where it says that you must be makdish to b'chor. If Shalom Damar takdish, can't tell him to do the hekdesh, Shariah Kvarimar lo yakdish. Because you have the pasuk in Vayikra that says don't do it. If Shalom Damar lo yakdish, can't say don't do it, because Shariah Kvarimar, it says in Devarim takdish. Hakate said, how do you resolve this problem? Makdisho ata hekdesh ilui, viata makdisho hekdesh mizbeach. You can be makdishit, this hekdesh ilui, but you can't change it to another korban or to another offering on the mizbeach. Now this is said about a bechor, and by a bechor, you have to, it is kadosh, mi rechem, and it has inherent kedusha as a bechor. So that is a given. So then what is the ability to be makdish it? So the way that Rabbi Yishmael explains it is that you can give the tovat hanah. That's what we spoke about in the previous Mishnah. The value of this korban to you, when it's a neder, it's the entire value of the animal, because you'll have to replace it, you're responsible personally for it. If it's a nedava, it is what would you pay for the ability to bring a gift or to bring a korban that you're not obligated to bring because of the fact that it's a nedava, and if it's lost or stolen or missing, you don't have to make it up, but maybe you still want the korban to get there, even though it's not your responsibility. So what would you pay for that? That's the tovat hanah that we spoke about. Or we spoke about the olah, the ability to move the olah from being brought by another mishmar to your mishmar. How much would you pay for that? And we saw at the end of the Mishnah the question about whether if you can pay someone to give this to your grandchild that is a kohen, or to your nephew that's a kohen, when you're not a kohen, how much would you pay for someone to do that, to give it to your particular relative who is a kohen? So all of those were known as tovat hanah, and that's the hekdesh iluy. As Rashi says, iluy means laloto b'damim. What value remains that you control in this animal? Although you can easily see it meaning iluy, meaning the extra or the amount above and beyond what is the natural value and hekdesh of this item. What extra value can you extract here in terms of hekdesh iluy? Bitain tovat hanah, the kohen. That's what you give to the kohen if some charamim the kohenim. Or stam charamim the bedek abayit, that would have to go to bedek abayit. And that's how Rabbi Shmuel knows this din, as opposed to chachamim that learned that out from the pasuk of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which is kol charam kodesh kodeshim hu l'Hashem. So he doesn't learn it from there, he learns it from the stira by Bechor. And then he learns from Bechor and extrapolates to other korbanot. Where it says, v'rabonon, v'rabonon lo taktish mebay le'lelav. So they need the lo taktish to tell you that it's a lav. That's usur to be maktish, a bechor, to transfer the kedusha, to change the kedusha to another animal. They need it as a lav. So it's not available for them for this limud of Rabbi Shmuel. Taktish mi baile. And what do they do with the positive statement that you're supposed to be maktish to the bechor? Lekedetanya. They learn that minayin nomalad bechor be'edro. How do I know when you have a bechor born in his flock, shemitzvah laktisho, that it's a mitzvah to be maktish it, shenemar. As Zachar Taktish, the apostle from Dvarim, that you still are Makdishit. So even though it has inherent Kedusha, seems like you have to be Makdishit. Rabbi Shmuel, Ilo Makdishle, Lo Kadosh, Kedushato Mirechem Avo. If you're not Makdishit, doesn't it still Kadosh? Its Kedusha is inherent. It's when it's born. It has Kedusha irrespective of what you do over here. Mekeimet Dechi, Lo Makdishle, Kadosh, Lo Tzarech Le'Kedusha. Since if you did nothing, it would still be Kadosh. Then there's no purpose in doing anything to be Makdishit. Your Haftasha serves no purpose over here. And therefore that can't be what the Psukim are asking, are telling you to do. So rather, he explains that it has to do with Hekdesh Iluy. The Chachamim obviously disagree with this and say, even though there's Hekdesh Mirechem, even though there's Haftasha Mirechem, there's still a value in you being Makdishit to reaffirm the Hekdesh that already exists. We spoke about this in the past, where we brought this up, especially in Bechorot and in Darim. We suggested that this is correlated with Kiddush on Friday night, with regards to Shabbat, where we say that Shabbat is Kiddusha V'Kaima. Shabbat exists and is Kadosh, irrespective of whether we're Makdishit or not. So then, what's the purpose of saying Kiddush on Friday night? So that might be the Machloket between the Rishonim about what the nature of Kiddush is on Friday night. Might be similar in nature to the Machloket that we find here, with regards to an item that's already kadosh, can you b'makdish it? Can you, or are you supposed to affirm the kedusha, which is the view of the chachamim? Or according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's a meaningless statement to be makdish or to do something like that, and therefore the kiddush must be either done at a different time or must be showing or demonstrating something else, because there's no point of being makdish something when it's already kadosh. That's the machloket that we have here between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Shmuel. With that, we complete the 8th parak, Adron Alach, Hamakdish Sadeu. Then we move on to the 9th parak, and the Mishnah says, Hamocher Sadeu B'Shata Yovel. Someone who sells his field, we're speaking about a Stei Achuza, that he's selling B'Shata Yovel means when the Yovel is being practiced. Eino Mutar Ligol Pachot Mishtei Shanim. He's not allowed to redeem it. Remember we just said before that by a Stei Achuza, you have a right to redeem it once you've sold it. But that's only after a minimum amount of time has elapsed, which is 2 years have to pass before you're allowed to do that. Because Shenemar, the Pasuk says, B'mispar Shanim,
achar hayovel, tignem me'et amitecha, b'mistar shtei tvuot im karlach. It says there that mispar shnei tvuot. He has to have a minimum of two harvests on the field. So now, hayta shnat shidafon. If one of those years, after you sold it, was a year where there was some sort of blight, there was a wind blast that ruined the crops, or yirakon, or there was some sort of dry spell that destroyed the crops, maybe even a drought, o shnat shvit, or one of the years was a shmita year, eno ola min haminyan, it's not counted. So these are issues, as the Balei Tosafot point out, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia says this, where it's affecting the entire country. It's affecting the entire area. It can't be that it's unique to this field. If it happened just on this field, we do not say this. And even if it just happened in this valley or this area or neighborhood, we also don't say it. It's got to be like a force majeure event by which it's an act of God. It's something that was out of control and is broadly affecting everyone that's out there. In that case, you didn't get a shana tvuah. You didn't get a productive year. And therefore, it doesn't count towards the 2 years of minimum that it has to stay with the buyer. Nira, on the other hand, if he plowed it and left it fallow, ohovira, or he left it completely fallow, that's what it says, it's lozu abzu, ola lo min aminyan. That counts as one of the 2 years. That's his choice. He left it fallow. He plowed it and left it fallow. That was his choice, but it could have been a productive year, and the fact that he didn't utilize it doesn't mean that he gets an extra year afterwards. The Rabbi Eliezer Omer, machra lo lifnei Rosh Hashanah, if he sold it to him before Rosh Hashanah, v'im le'at peirot, and it's full, it's loaded, it's ready to be harvested, harei zeh ochel mimena shlosh tvuot k'shtei shanim. The possibility that he eats 3 tvuot over 2 years. So what Rabbi Eliezer is pointing out, he's not necessarily arguing on the Tanakhama, he's just pointing out that the two things. One is that the 2 years we're counting here are mi'et le'at. They go from the moment of the sale till that date 2 years later, exactly then, that's when it is the 2 years. That then opens up the possibility of having more than shnei tvuot. And that's what he explains here, that the possibility is that you, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, bought the field, and then it extends for 2 years. You bought it when it was laden, and you harvested it. Then you harvested it the next year, and then in the second year, you also harvested it, because you harvest it before you give it back, before the 2 years elapse. So there's a possibility of 3 harvests. And that can only be possible if you count May 8th, not if you count by the calendar year. Because otherwise, the time period before Rosh Hashanah would every turn over the page and you would be in a new year. And then you would have already counted 1 year, and now you'd be in your second year. And that's what the Shita Mekubetzet says, you know, Bet, that's the Chiddush over here. Yesh lomar, delur buta nakat lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Why does he mention lifnei Rosh Hashanah over here? Even though normally we say if you have 30 days before Rosh Hashanah, that makes it as if you have a full year. Over here, that doesn't work. So that's the chiddush of Rabbi Eliezer, that there's this need for me'et le'et, and it's not based on the calendar year. It's not the year turning over in Rosh Hashanah. It's 2 years, and 2 years can then allow you to have shnei tvuot. In addition to that, he says that the pasuk, when it's saying b'mispar shanim achar yovel tiknem et amitecha b'mispar shnei tvuot im kalach, that the focus is on the shnei, that the 2 years is the main factor. Tvuot are just an indication that they have to be productive years. They have to be years in which it could have been productive, but it's not coming to tell you that you must get 2 tvuot or only 2 tvuot. It just means that it's 2 years of productive capability, which could even be 3 tvuot. Now Gemara says, "Amocher sadeh b'shat yovel, eino goel lo ktani." And the Mishnah doesn't say that you cannot redeem it. Ela eino mutar ligo. It says you may not at all. It's not even mutar to redeem it. Alma kasavar. For a Mishnah, it sounds like isura nami ika, that it's also a sur. Not only can you not do it, but you may not do it. So there's a restriction against doing such. The seller who sold the property to this individual can't come waving bags of money in front of him to return it to him. He can't coax or entice the individual to sell it back to him because it's asur to do it. And lo mi boi mocher dekoi ba'asei, and I'm not just speaking about the seller, who now would want to take it back, where he is restricted, dichtiv, b'mispar shnei tivot im karlach, because he has an assay to leave the, with two tvuot with the buyer, el afilu lokeach nami koyiv assay. Even the purchaser over here is subject to an assay, and if he agrees to return it, he's in violation of that assay to be none, shanim tikneh, which is the beginning of the pasuk, which is mispar shanim achar yovel tikneh. So there we say, mispar shanim, shanim, minimum of two, achar yovel tikneh, he will purchase it. He must purchase it for a minimum of 2 years. Veleka, and that fails if he gives it back. So based on this, we have a minimum requirement of 2 years that remains there. But not only is that a suggested minimum, that is a necessary minimum. And if you don't allow for that minimum to take place, you are then in violation of mitzvot aseh, both by the seller and the buyer when they reverse the transaction. Now, what happens if the two parties agree to reverse the transaction? Is that efficacious? So the Shita Mikubetzet brings a machloket over here between the Ri and his son, the Rabbeinu Elchanan. He says, Nir the Ri, Dim Shneem Nitratsu, if they both agree to it, Afopisha so Isur, even though they're doing the wrong thing and they're violating Isur, Mahani, it works. And whatever is done and they can return it. But then he brings, Rabbeinu Elchanan Beno, his son, Rabbeinu Elchanan, Hayomer, Delo Mahani. It doesn't work because he says, why did the Gemara say over here that when the mocher goes and shakes money in front of him, that that's asur? Dafilu karkushe zuze nami asur. What's the extra language, or what's the necessity to say if he's shaking money and enticing him that it's asur? So he says, that comes to teach you, hachikama kesheba le'go'ala benatana ma'ot. Afagav deino karkushe zuze ba'alma. Even though all you're doing is shaking money, or enticing him and paying him, which isn't really a maise, Delo asa, velo klum, he barely did anything. He just enticed him to give it back to him. Viluachi isura ika. There's still an isur, and it's still problematic, meaning that you cannot execute on it. It doesn't work. What it's saying is that even though all you were doing was trying to buy it back, which is a kind of ineffective action, nevertheless, you're still held accountable for violating the isur. So you see from the Rabbeinu Chanan, he thinks that you can't do this, and it's not effective when you do this. And the Shita Mikubetzet, quoting the Rosh, says, V'nirin divrei Rabbeinu Elchanan. He thinks that Rabbeinu Elchanan is right over here, and that it's not effective, and you cannot buy it back in the 2 years, even though you're in violation of the Isur. The Isur makes it that it's actually impossible for you to buy it back during that 2 year period. Itmar, here's a machloket that we already quoted earlier in the Masechta, and we quoted in the context of another machloket, Rav and Shmuel, which is correlated with this, which is Itmar. Someone who sells his field on the Yovel itself. You were successful at selling it, and then you're forced to disgorge it or give it back to the owners. And, as Rashi says over here, and the buyer lost his money. He just made a bad, really bad deal. He bought it, and it just goes right back to the person who sold it to him, and he loses his money in that case. So it's mechura, it works, the mechira goes through, the transaction goes through, but then it gets disgorged, it gets released right away. So now, what's interesting about this is that it can't be that we're speaking about the first 10 days of the Yovel year. The Yovel is mishamet the karka on Yom HaKippurim. So you're telling me that Rav's case over here is only a case where he did this in the first 10 days of the Yovel, and then the Yovel releases it? That doesn't seem to be the case throughout the Gemara over here. Rather, any time during the Yovel, Rav feels that there is this return or this release of property. And so even though with property coming into the Yovel, it gets released somewhere between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, we saw the machloket between Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel Benosh or Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, about whether it's on Rosh Hashanah or on Yom Kippurim. But that is with regards to property coming in. Property that is sold on the Yovel itself, Rav thinks that the power of the Yovel is that it can release it throughout the Yovel itself. There are those that want to prove from here that maybe the Yovel only works at the end of the year. It doesn't work at the beginning of the year, according to Rav, which would be a huge chiddush. But what seemingly is happening here is that Rav says the entire Yovel year has this capacity to release. Now, obviously, when you're coming in, it's at the beginning. But any time during the year, if you buy something, it's going to be released immediately. Shmuel says it fails the transaction, as Rashi says over here,
you have to return the money because there was no transaction over here. My time of the Shmuel, what's the reasoning of Shmuel? This we spoke about earlier in the Masechta when we quoted this. Kal v'chomer, uma mechurak var yotza, something that was already sold prior to the Yovel is released on the Yovel. She'enu mechura, enu din shalotim acher, something that wasn't sold before the Yovel. Now that it's being sold on the Yovel, certainly it should be released, or certainly it can't be sold. So there's no mechira that can take effect, because mechirot that happened before the Yovel are unwound by the Yovel, and certainly on the Yovel itself, it's going to automatically unwind any mechira, and there is no mechira. For the Rav, lo aminin kal v'chomer ki agavna. According to Rav, we don't say a kal v'chomer like that. That's not a proper form of logical argument or kal v'chomer. That just because beforehand it releases it and the sale is then annulled, because the Yovel now makes it go back to the original owner, so too on the Yovel itself, it'll be annulled and there's no transaction, it goes back to the original owner. But rather, it is a sale, but it just gets released. That's the way the Kal v'chomer should work. V'ha tanyo, we have a braita. Yochol yimkor adam et bito kishihi ne'ara. I would think that a person has the ability to sell his daughter off as an ama ivriya when she reaches the age of a nara. Amart kal v'chomer. Again, a similar type of kal v'chomer. Uma mechura kvar yotza achshav. If you had a young girl who sold as an ama ivriya by her father when she was a youngster, when she reaches the age of ne'ara, the age of puberty, she is then released automatically. She'enu mechura, if she was not sold until that point, enu din shaloti macher, then certainly she should not be able to be sold from that point forward. Now, the Rashi says it's because en adam mocher bitol shifchut achar shifchut. And once she's released from a shifchut, you can't re-enter her into shifchut, you can't re-enter into her being an ama avriya. Tosfot does not love that explanation because that happens to be a machloket tanaim. And he says that's only according to one of the two tanaim. Tosfot in the end then backs away and says maybe it is only according to Rabbi Shimon, and we pass him like him that what the din that Rashi brings is true. But Tosfot introduces a possibility that even according to other opinions that don't agree with that, even though a person can be mocher, his daughter, from being an ama avriya when she's released to be an ama avriya again, but once she reaches the age of puberty, everybody agrees he has no right to sell her anymore. So everybody agrees at that point that that sale or that ability to sell is terminated, or and the girl is released no matter what. So because of that, it's not really opinion driven according to the Baalei Tosafot, it's age driven. And that age tells you that the age would release her from being an ama avriya. And certainly the father doesn't have a right to sell her in to be an ama avriya once she's reached that age. So the Gemara is saying, look, I have a paradigm of a kal v'chomer like that by ama avriya, so we do say kal v'chomers like that. You're telling me we don't say kal v'chomers like that? I have a kal v'chomer by ama avriya that does exactly that. And so why wouldn't you apply the similar kal v'chomer here by the Yovel? Gemara says, no, it's different. Hatam lo hadra mizdabno, hacha hadra mizdabno. Over there, you can't go back and sell her. Over here, you can go back and sell her. Meaning, by the ama avriya, once she's released from being an ama avriya, when she reaches the age of puberty, when she reaches the age of ne'ara, then she's released forever. The father will never have auspices to resell her again. He'll never have the ability to make her into an ama avriya again. So that release is a permanent release. Given that it's a permanent release, then we can make the kal v'chomer and say, if she was already in servitude, she's released. Then certainly if she's not in servitude yet, she can't be put into servitude, because that's the standing of this girl. She is released permanently. There's a change in her status that will remain with her for the rest of her life. That's not true by the Yovel. The Yovel is a temporary time period in which this is true. Once the Yovel passes, and that's what the Baalei Tosafot say, even though on the Yovel itself it can't work, but post the Yovel, it is not a permanent state that you can't sell something. You could sell something once the Yovel has cleared. And then it'll be back to the state it was before, and you have the right to sell the property again. So the Yovel is a temporary way of suspending all transactions. It's not a permanent stay of all transactions. And so because of that, he thinks that the kal v'chomer by the Yovel is not a strong kal v'chomer. And that's why Rav says, we don't make a kal v'chomer by Yovel, even though we do make it by the ama ha'ivriya. Meitevei, achar Yovel, shanim tikneh. So it says, after the Yovel, and the Pasuk says, Mispar Shanim, Achar Yovel, Tikneh. So that's a reference to after the Yovel. It says you're allowed to sell it. From there you can see, Shemachrim, Samochle Yovel. That you're allowed to sell immediately after the Yovel. Muflag mina yovel minayin. How do I know you can sell the property or stay achuzah even many years after the yovel? Tamilomar lefi rova shanim ulefi miuta shanim. The pasuk then says subsequent to mispar shanim achar yovel tiknem eitam mitecha bimispar shnei tivot im karlach. Lefi rova shanim tarbe miknato lefi miuta shanim tamit miknato ki mispar tivot hu mocher lach. So then you see that it doesn't matter how far away you are from the yovel, you're able to sell it. On the yovel itself, you may not sell it. And if you do sell it, it doesn't work. You are not successful at that. That sounds exactly like Shmuel's position against Rav. How's Rav going to deal with this braita? It works as a sale, but not the regular sale of a yovel. When it says that in the yovel year, it's not a sale. It means it's not a sale like a regular sale. A regular sale would give the right to the buyer to be there for a minimum of 2 years of tvuot. This sale doesn't work like that. This sale automatically is reversed immediately upon the sale taking place, the transaction taking place. It's reversed immediately afterwards. So that's what it means. Eina mechura, it doesn't work. It doesn't work to give you the normal rights you have with the purchase of estate achuza. But it does work to make you lose your money and have a transaction take place. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. These davunim is davna tikim b'shute. Wait a minute. If the sale is a good sale, why doesn't it stay in the hands of the buyer? Ad batar yovel. Until and after the yovel. U batar yovel nechlei shnei tvuot. Let him then keep it for the 2 years post the yovel. V'nehadret. And then it will go back to the original owner without any money and it will be returned to him. If you're going to say it's an effective sale, but the Yovel releases it, then at least give him his rights for the 2 years. Why does Rav say that there are no 2 year rights? Ve'lo Tanya. Don't we have a braita that tells you? Achla shana achat lifnei Yovel. If he ate it for a year before the Yovel, mashlimim lo shana acheret achar Yovel. Even though the property is going to be released in the Yovel, go back to its original owner, the buyer has a right to eat his second year after the Yovel. Now, it is a little strange because the year before the Yovel was always a Shemitah year. So, it's very hard to argue that he ate the year before the Yovel because the year before the Yovel was always the Shemitah year. It's the 49th year. So, it has to be meaning that the year before the Shemitah year, he ate 1 year. Then the Shemitah came, and which is not counted towards his 2 years that we saw in the Mishnah. And then the Yovel came and released the property. But he didn't get his minimum 2 years. He can make up that year after the Yovel, even though the property is going back to the owner. So why don't you say the same thing over here? If you sell during the Yovel, Rav says it's an effective sale, then let him also gain his 2 years of productivity, and he'll just have to do it after the Yovel. As soon as he finishes his 2 years of productivity, the Yovel would have affected the land, and now it'll be released back to the original owner. So he won't lose all of his money, he'll just lose 48 years worth of his money, because he'll get 2 years of productivity out of that field. Where it says there's a difference. Hatam nachit achilo. Over there, in the case where we give him the time afterwards, is whereas he already began the process of using the field and the production of the field before the Yovel. Hachalonochit la'achila. Over here, he never began that process, and the Yovel doesn't allow him to begin that process. And why? That's why you don't gain that 2 year minimum when you sell the Yovel, according to Rav. Amar Rav Anan, Shamat minei demar Shmuel tarte. I heard two things, or two dinim, from Shmuel. Chadahach. One of them is this din by the Yovel, which says that if you sell the property during the Yovel, ain't a mechura kol ikar, the whole transaction fails, and it was as if there was no transaction, so null the vidach. And the other one he said was, ha-mucher abdol the oved kochavim, someone who sells his eved knani to a non-Jew, o lechutzalaretz, or he is living in Eretz Yisrael, and he sells it to someone who is from chutzalaretz, is going to take him back out to chutzalaretz, Yatzad HaCherut, the Eved is released automatically, it's a Knas Chachamim, and that the Eved is automatically freed. Now, Chada, of these two scenarios where Shmuel told me the din, one by Yovel, where we say that Eina Mechura, the sale doesn't go through, and over here by the case of the Eved Knani, where he's released. Chada Hadre, Zvine, in one of them the transaction is annulled, and the other one, the transaction stands, but we still penalize them. So one of the cases is what Rav described before, which is that the transaction is effective, it just then gets disgorged right away, or we force you to deal with the consequences of that. And one of them, the transaction is completely annulled to the point where you're going to get your money back. And the Gemara says, he says about this, lay down a heminayu, a heminay. And I don't know which one is which. I have these two cases, and I don't know which is which. So both the Balei Tosafot and Rashi over here say, what do you mean? It's pshita. We know exactly which one it is, because that was the nafkamina between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said before the transaction's effective, and therefore the guy loses his money. And Shmuel says the transaction was completely ineffective, and that's why he doesn't lose his money, the buyer. So that is the difference between Rav and Shmuel. If you tell me now that Shmuel's saying the same thing, that the transaction's effective, just it gets annulled right away after it goes effective, then Rav and Shmuel are saying the exact same thing. If that's the case, then I have my answer to my question right off the bat. So Rashi says, it's not true. I'll give you two other nafkaminot between Rav and Shmuel, even if Shmuel believes that the transaction not reversed, that the transaction stands and the guy loses his money. So he says, V'kash pshita, t'machta mocher sadeh v'shnati uvel kamar Shmuel, t'mechach batel v'amot kozrim, t'imamot avudim, if the money is lost, ma'ika ben Rav and Shmuel. Then what's the difference between Rav and Shmuel? Ika ben ayu. Here are the nafkamina between them, even if the money is lost, according to both of them. E shamit lokeach mikatsitsani lanot shayuba. What happens when the transaction took place, right immediately as the transaction took place, the buyer went ahead and cut down a bunch of trees in the field, and then the field goes back to the original owner. That's what Rav says. So according to Rav, where the transaction is effective for a moment, in that moment, if the buyer did something, he's not going to either be held accountable for it, or he's able to take it and keep it for himself. Because there was a transaction, there was a sale that went through. So that's according to Rav. Whereas according to Shmuel, that says, Eina Mechura, that it's not sold at all, and the monies are staying with the seller, even though there was no sale, because we consider him like a gift, as if he gave away or threw away his money. Over there, there's no transaction at all. Since there's no transaction at all, what you cut down, you're going to be responsible for, or whatever was in the, whatever you took, you're going to have to repay, because there was no sale over here. That's one nafkamina. The Shit Mikubetzet in Ot Yud Zayin says about that, Gilyon, there was something written on the margin, Velo Nehiro. They don't agree with this nafkamina that Rashi says, Taishnuya Demad Zira Mishane Shalobishut Katzatz. He says that that doesn't make sense, because even according to Rav, where the sale is effective, it immediately gets annulled. The sale goes through, and then immediately Yovel sends it back. There's no interim period in which you own it. There's no period of time where it comes really into your possession. That's really a machloket Rashi, and the view here that's brought in the Shita Mekubetzet from the Rosh, which is that whether when you, Rav says the sale is effective, is there a moment in time where you actually own it, and then it's disgorged, or is it so immediate that the moment the transaction goes through, it's already released, that there's no point in time where you ever own it? That would be one possible nafkamina. And then Rashi brings Inami, a second nafkamina is, Gon Shemocheri Ma Metalteling. He has a Kinyan Agav. He sold Metalteling along with the Karka as a Kinyan Agav in order to effectuate the Kinyan on the Metalteling, which you're allowed to do. You can have a Kinyan Karka, which then affects the Metalteling, and they go through as well because they're done on Gava Karka. So according to Rav, since there really is a transaction, however momentary it is, there was a transaction. If that's the case, the Kinyan for the Karka is also effective for the metalteling. According to Shmuel, where there's no sale over here, you don't reverse the sale, but there was no sale, and nothing happened except the fact that you lost your money, and you handed it away, you gave it away as a gift, over there, then the Kinyan Agav would not work. You had no Kinyan on the Karka, there was no sale that went through, so certainly it's not effective in creating a Kinyan for the metalteling. Tosavot on Lamed Amal Aleph points out that he thinks that this view of Rav, that you can sell something for a momentary period of time, which then has the effect of allowing a Kinyan Agav, that is unique to this idea where you're mocher, and then it's immediately annulled afterwards. But if it's done through a matana o menat achzir, or it's done through a loan or through renting, there is no point in time where we consider it to be real ownership effective enough to allow you to do a Kinyan Chalipin on that type of ownership, and therefore you can't effectuate a Kinyan Agav in those situations through a Kinyan Chalipin. Elaim, can you do a proper Kinyan Karka on those items? Whereas here, by this type of sale, like Rav says, this mechira is so effective as a mechira, even though it's going to be annulled or released immediately, that you can even do a kinyan hagav, or you can even do a kinyan chalipin in order to effectuate the transaction. So those are the two nafkamino Rashi brings. Even if you agree, according to both Rav and Shmuel, the buyer loses his money. He loses it for different reasons. According to Rav, he loses the money because the sale went through, and then it was immediately released by the Ovel. According to Shmuel, the monies are lost, not because the sale went through, but because there was no sale, and then we assume the guy gave the money as a matana, and that's why he loses his money, he's not getting it back. So there are still nafkaminot between them, even if they both believe that the lokeach loses the money. And now we want to know which of those two dinim that are being quoted by Rav Hanan over here by Shmuel, which of them did Shmuel say that the transaction was completely annulled, and the other one where the transaction is held but he's still penalized. Amar Rav Yosef, Nech Seanan. Yosef says, why can't we figure it out ourselves? Midetanya v'braita. We have a braita that tells us, a mecher avdo v'chutz la'aretz, or lechutz la'aretz. Someone who sells his eved kanani to go be taken lechutz la'aretz when he's in Eretz Yisrael. Yatzah lecheirut. He is released. He is freed. That's what we just saw in the din of Shmuel. V'tzarich get shichru mirabo sheni. And he needs a document of emancipation from his second owner. Shmamina, from that braita you can see, in the karile l'sheni rabo, it says from rabo sheni, from his second master, that implies that he had a second master and the transaction was effective. Ama lo hadre zvine. That's the case where the transaction is effective and we still penalize the buyer. Even though the transaction was effective, we still penalize him and we force him to free the slave. So if that's the case, then kikamar shmo hocha, ena mechura, that means in our case here by Shemitah, when he says ena mechura, means that there was no transaction here at all, and the monies go back to the buyer because nothing happened, in essence. Rav Hanan, why didn't Rav Hanan figure out what Rav Yosef figured out? Breita lo shmile. He didn't know this breita that Rav Yosef brought down, therefore he was unable to come to the conclusion about which of the cases Shmuel said each of his dinim. Ud Shmuel, the girs over here, in all likelihood, you can see this in the Shita Mekubetzet, as well as in the Rabbeinu Gershom, that the girs over here should not be Ud Shmuel, but rather Mid Shmuel. Mid Shmuel, Mimai Deina Mechura, Uma Ot Chozrin. How do you know that when it says Eina Mechura, it means that the money is given back and the transaction is annulled completely? Dilma, Eina Mechura. Maybe what he means is Eina Mechura, the transaction is invalid, Uma Ot Matana, and the monies are a gift. Similar to Shmuel's position, wherein a person tries to marry his sister. So, what we're saying here is that Rav Anan's thought process was not unreasonable. He didn't know the Braita. And with regards to the Ovel, where Shmuel says, Eina Mechura can mean one of two things. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out over here. That it could mean Eina Mechura, totally invalidated, money goes back to the buyer. Or it can mean Eina Mechura, it's not valid, but the monies are given to the individual as a gift because you knew it was invalid. Like someone who's Mekadesh Achoto, Ditmar. Mekadesh Achoto, someone who tries to marry his sister. Rav Amar Mot Chozrin. Rav says it's completely invalid and the money goes back because you can't marry your sister. Shmuel Amar Maot Matana. Shmuel says that the monies are a gift because we assume that everybody knows that Kiddushin are not effective with your sister. And so why else would you do this? Elim Cain, you are going to give the monies as a gift. Rav says, no, you're depositing the money with her to watch for you, and you're going to take it back. So it's a pikadon. Shmuel says, no, it's a gift, because you know that it doesn't work, and the only reason you're doing this is to gift her the money. And so, maybe similarly, we would say the same thing by the Yovel, that since you know that their transactions in the Yovel are not effective, then when you invalidate the transaction, you still say the money stay with the seller, because it was a matana. The Tosfot in the end says that's not what we say. We say that by Mekadesh Ochoto, Shmuel says that the monies are considered a matana, but by Yovel, it's not considered to be a matana. So he says that's the difference. Everybody knows that you can't marry your sister, or it's an invalid marriage. Not everybody knows that you can't sell on the Yovel. And since that's not as widely known, we can't assume that the monies he gave as a matana. He might have thought the transaction was a real transaction, and we are invalidating that transaction. Now, Amalei Abai the Rav Yosef. Abai says to Rav Yosef, "My chazit the kansin and lelokeach." Why does Shmuel say, and similarly the Braita say, that when you sell an Eved Kanani from someone who resides in Eretz Yisrael to someone who is in Chutz La'aretz, who's going to take him out to Chutz La'aretz, or you sell him to a non-Jew, why do we penalize the buyer and say that the buyer has to release him and he doesn't get his money back? You can't say the mocher. Why don't we penalize the seller and say that the seller has to return the money and he loses the evet? Why are we penalizing the buyer only and not the seller? So Amarlei, so Rav Yosef says back to Abaye, Lav achbara ganav, elochora ganav. Says that when a mouse steals food, he's only effective in his theft if he can go and hide it in the hole. Which means that the hole is what does the theft. Because without the hole, the mouse would be caught, or the mouse would have nowhere to go to hide with his stolen food. And so therefore it's the hole that is stealing over here. So then Baye says back to him, Ilav achbara chora minale. He says, wait a minute. If there's just a hole over there, the hole can't steal. The hole needs the mouse to bring the food there in order to be that the hole is stealing or protecting the stolen goods. Or in essence, what we're saying is, you need two parties to tango. You need two players over here in order for there to be an illegal sale that goes on. And both the seller and the buyer are equally culpable. So if that's the case, then why are you penalizing the buyer and not the seller? What makes you do that? He says, Mistavra echa deite li sura kansina. It makes sense that wherever the Isur resides now, that's who we go after. Since right now the Eved is together with the Lokeach, that's where the Isur resides, that's why we force him to disgorge the Eved and lose out, because he's the one holding illegally the Eved at this point in time. So Enoch and Ami, we should penalize the Mocher as well. They're both partners, they both should get penalized. But in terms of being effective with our penalties, the only way we can do it is to go after the person who is now currently holding that Eved. And that's why we force him to disgorge the Eved and to free the Eved, because that's the best way to have the Knas be effective in this situation. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph.